I'm seriously at a loss. I know the news is almost 2 days old, but it is still resonating around the United States and all over Canada. The expansion Vegas Golden Knights, a makeshift team of unprotected players, cast-offs, and they've already had to play what a month ago would have been considered their fifth option in goal. In spite of all that, they're as hot as any team in the National Hockey League after their season's first 9 games. Based on history, it is without question spectacular and bordering miraculous. All I can think of to say about it at this point is Vegas strong, baby. Vegas strong. Well, good morning and welcome to another edition of Out of Line. We are here every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 on Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, home of the Vegas Golden Knights. We're also streaming live on the Fox Sports Network. I'm Brian Feldman. And the other part of we is future Nevada Hall of Fame producer Magnum. And if we actually get to everything I see on the agenda in 1 hour, it will too be a miracle. Social media handles. Twitter is at Out of Line 1340 AM. And you can find us on Facebook. The page is called Out of Line. That's O-U-T-T-A-L-I-N-E. And no matter how pressed for time we are, let's face it, without you, there's no show. So if you have something on your mind, pick up the phone, turn down your radio, and say what you got to say. The Fox Sports studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Hold up. Because you haven't heard this one since 1983. The Rebels have won a game in Fresno. Since 1983, they had not won. 7 straight times they had lost. And rain is not going to help the Bulldogs now. The Rebels pull off an absolutely prodigious upset here in Fresno State. The clock is at 0. The final score, UNLV 26, Fresno State 16.
What's on Tap is pouring out thanks to Bubby's University on South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo, a great place to watch every game. Today is mostly about the Vegas Golden Knights. They are simply too good and too big of a story not to talk a lot about. Shortly, we'll be joined by Dressie Granger, who covers the Golden Knights for the Las Vegas Sun, and then Frank Harnish will be stopping by the Fox Sports studio. Frank is the main man for everything VGK at Lotus Broadcasting, and if you listen to Fox Sports Radio, hardly a day goes by that you don't hear Frank talking hockey. Later on in the show, we will talk to a professional bull rider, Cody Ford, who came off a great performance yesterday in the PBR's Velocity event at the South Point Hotel and Casino. That event wraps up tomorrow, and the PBR moves to T-Mobile Arena next week for the World Final event, and I will have tickets to give away. I will also have some Fright Dome tickets to hook you up with for Halloween. Hey, we also have the World Series to talk about, and of course, the NFL heads into Week 8, and me, Magnum, and Dewey were all perfect with our picks last week. Want some poor man's advice? Stick around. And hey, don't think for 1 minute that we are going to overlook what UNLV did in Fresno yesterday. You heard the highlight a minute ago. What's on Tap is brought to you by Bubby's University, where you can earn your degree in food, draft beer, gaming, and the hard stuff. The only major is a good time. Bring your Rebel ID and your first beer is free. You can enroll 24 hours a day. Yes, that means they never close. Bubby's University at 4570 South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo. Go to bubbysuniversity.com for more information.
Facts this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
UNLV shocked us again. This time, however, by winning a game most would have told you they had no chance to win. They beat Fresno State 26-16, scoring the last 10 points of the game in the fourth quarter and shutting out Fresno State in the fourth quarter. Also a fact, Fresno State has been the biggest surprise in the Mountain West Conference, and we're looking like a shoe-in to play in the Mountain West Conference championship game. This, in my opinion, is the biggest win in Tony Sanchez's college coaching career, considering their play in the second half of all Mountain West games to this point. Am I right? I mean, how big of a win for Tony Sanchez was that game?
Well, I don't know if it's the biggest win. I think that the win over Reno.
I know you were going to say that. Cannon. Everyone's saying the cannon. Well, I think it's bigger.
Well, because here's the thing. You throttled Fresno State last year. You should have beaten them 2 years ago. So it's not uncommon for Tony Sanchez coach teams to play well against Fresno State. They've done it in his previous two seasons at the helm of UNLV. Now,
When the last time they beat Fresno State in Fresno State?
1983.
Yeah, a long time ago.
But since Tony Sanchez has been coaching this program, UNLV's played them very, very well. Should have won the first year except for that monsoon that opened up in the fourth quarter. And then last year, UNLV crushed them. So I still think the win against Reno in his first year is bigger. In terms of
what was the point spread in the Reno
game? It doesn't matter. Okay. It's irrelevant. Point spread doesn't matter. We're talking in terms of big wins, beating your in-state rival who have owned you lately.
Faust beat him once. Or what's his name? Hauk beat him once.
Hauk beat him once. Reno had won like 9 of the last 10. And Sanchez went up there and kicked their ass. So that's a big win.
He didn't. He got beat at home by him last year.
Yeah. So that's the thing. However, based on how this team had played the last 2 weeks after the San Jose State game, blowing that 27-point lead to Fresno or to Air Force, blowing a double-digit lead last week at home against Utah State, playing a third-string quarterback who was playing linebacker for you last week, I think it's Tony. I won't say it's the biggest win. I will say, however, it's Tony Sanchez's best coaching job at UNLV from start to finish. This was a team that should have lost, or UNLV should have lost to, easily by 3 touchdowns. The fact that they were in the game the entire time, played extremely well in the second half, shut them out in the fourth quarter. My hat's off to Tony Sanchez, Barney Cotton, and Kent Bayer. The best job the three of them have done since they've been at UNLV. However, it's like, I don't know what to expect next week now.
You know, see where I say it's the biggest win, only because you have had, in the second half, since the Mountain West Conference started, and you can even go back to the beginning, they have been one of the worst, if not the worst, second half team in the country. They shut out a team that you can say Tony Sanchez has had Fresno State's number. Fresno State is by far not only the biggest surprise in the Mountain West before yesterday's debacle, they're one of the biggest surprises in the country.
Well, they were.
This team should and look like they were headed straight to the undefeated in the Mountain West Conference. They have been playing really solid, well-coached, very concise football to this point in the season. All of a sudden, they lose to a UNLV team that can't score in the second half, and yet UNLV shuts them out and scores the final 10 points of the game. Johnny Stanton's a guy who hasn't put his hands behind a center's rear end this entire season, and the reason he was playing linebacker last week and a couple weeks ago blocked a punt because he went to Tony Sanchez and said, look, I know my days of quarterback here are done. It's his senior year, his final year to play football. Can I please get on the field? And he wanted to play so bad. He had such a big heart, and really, Palandek played lousy last week when he came in for Armani Rogers. I guess over the course of the week, Tony Sanchez says, you know what? Stanton really wants to play. Let's see what he can do. Now, he wasn't overly spectacular or overly impressive. He managed the game yesterday. He did his job. He managed the game coming in cold after really just running scout team defenses, and he played very well in place of Armani Rogers in an environment where you're talking about, again, UNLV, a 30-point underdog to a team because how well Fresno State's been playing. UNLV had no business winning this football game. And that is the reason I say it is Tony Sanchez's biggest win to date. Yes, the getting the cannon and going up there and retrieving it and getting it back after we, you know, Hauk won it, it went away, then Sanchez got it back and it went away again. It's always a big win beating your interstate rival. But you just beat a team that most people feel is one of the top two teams this year in the Mountain West, and you went to their house and beat them after you have been completely inept in the second half of every game this year. He's been outcoached. So when you say it's his best coaching job, I agree with you. But that would also make it his best game, and I say his biggest win because the bottom line is if they lose this game, I think Hawaii's winnable and nothing else is winnable, and they're going to go with 3 wins this year, and Tony Sanchez's ass is going to feel the flames even starting next season. This changes everything. Well, now they beat Hawaii. All of a sudden, they're back to where there is a snowball's chance in hell of a bowl game. BYU, all of a sudden at home, Mags, becomes a winnable football game. That is a bad Brigham Young team that can be beat by teams in the Mountain West. Hawaii is a very winnable football game, and I think that's a game that they could definitely pull off. The real tough games they have left is obviously going up to Reno, and I thought at the beginning of the year that was going to be a winnable game. Reno's up and down like UNLV, and the toughest game on their schedule is going to New Mexico. I don't know how the hell they win that game, but Chris, if you would have told me before this weekend, I would have said, I don't know how the hell they beat Fresno State. So could Tony Sanchez shock the world and run the table? I say no way in hell, but you know what? I would have bet, Mags, if you would have given me a pick'em in the game yesterday, say somebody came to us and said, hey guys, I got a secret bet for you. One site right now is going pick'em, UNLV Fresno State. How much money do you put on that game?
I would have put a lot.
A lot! That's my point. But look,
you could say it's the best team he's beaten. You could say it's his best coaching job. I still think that the win over Reno his first year at Reno is a bigger win for the program. Now, they did beat Wyoming last year, a very good team. They were playing.
They did beat Wyoming, who was also in the similar situation to Fresno State, overachieved. They had a great quarterback, which we all have learned in Wyoming, and they won that game. And true, that was one they shouldn't have won. But
they did go to Hawaii last year and beat a Hawaii team that went to a bowl game.
Mags, so we had given up completely on this team. And I'm not going to say I put my foot in my mouth, because the truth of the matter is there's not anybody out there that's not full of crap that's not saying they thought UNLV was completely done this year and starting to begin to worry about Tony Sanchez. If we had the tape of last week and I asked you, is it time to start pointing a finger? You said yes, and I'm right there with you.
And you know what? And how they finish the season will determine how big of a win this actually is. Because if they end up the season losing the next four...
Well, if they lose to Hawaii after this, it just flips everything back upside down. That's exactly my point.
So how they respond to this win... And look, maybe people could say, well, Fresno wasn't up for the game. They just come off the win after beating their in-state rival, San Diego State. They kick San Diego State's ass at Qualcomm. I don't care. I hate that argument. Oh, well, they weren't up for the game. So what? Who cares? How UNLV responds the next four games will determine how big of a win this is. Because last year when they beat Wyoming, they tanked it the next two. They got their ass kicked by Boise, and then they got humiliated here by Reno. So how they respond to this win is going to be the telltale sign for next season. Because if they can win three of these next four games, they get to 6-6. I said they would be 7-5 before the season. I think that 6-6 is a fair assessment or a fair barometer for this team. However, if they go 0-4 and finish 3-8 or 3-9, this season's a complete failure.
I agree, but like I said, this gives renewed hope. And now I pose a question, and we'll go to break on this question. Think about it. I don't have an answer to this question.
I know what you're going to ask.
I bet you don't.
Does he play Armani Rodgers at quarterback next week?
Wow, Mags, man. He sometimes, maybe it's Halloween and you're going to be a mind reader on Tuesday.
No, but
it wasn't, do they play him?
Yes.
My question was, yes. Of course they play Armani Rodgers when he's healthy. My question is, how short of a leash in the second half of the game, if he starts seeing this same thing, because the guy that's been behind center for most of this second half collapse has been Armani Rodgers. So you've seen Johnny Stanton manage a game, and again, nothing special. Spectacular. He didn't turn the ball over and he managed a football game. So do you shorten the leash a little bit saying,
no.
Hey, we know Armani Rodgers. I see, Mags, we know Armani Rodgers is going to be fine in the future. Johnny Stanton's a senior, but you know what I saw a little bit of yesterday? And we're going to have him on probably next week again. I saw a little bit of Caleb Herring in Giants, a kid that was just dying to see the football field. And the minute every opportunity he gets is like, in his mind, the last opportunity. And Caleb kind of said it when he was in here. Like, you know, he never thought, he dreamed he was going to get that one more opportunity. You've got a freshman quarterback, now a sophomore, 2 years younger, that was the starter the previous year in Nick Sherry. He thinks he's done. He's like praying to get a few snaps at wide receiver. Next thing you know, Nick Sherry's completely inept. We go down 21-3 against Central Michigan. I say we, and I apologize. I'm pulling my old son on me with the we thing. But they go down 21-3 at halftime to Central Michigan. Caleb Herring comes in and is the second coming of Randall Cunningham for the rest of the season. And I wonder if Johnny Stanton were, you know, I'm thinking as a coach, you ride a hot hand. And I was listening, you know, and it's a totally switching the subject. We got to go to break. But John Smoltz yesterday in the World Series was talking about the intangible, like keeping how they were keeping, or 2 nights ago, keeping Peacock in longer. And he stretched it out because a good coach in Hinch said, you know what, I know statistically this isn't a good idea to let him go 4 and 1/3 innings or whatever, but he's throwing the ball so well. There's such good movement on his fastball. And you throw out all the statistics and you run what your eyes can see. Your eyes right now should be able to see Johnny Stanton's desire to get on the gridiron at Sam Boyd Stadium and any other place UNLV plays this year, because he knows it is the last time he will ever put on football pads in his life. And maybe you let this kid take you to a bowl game. It's food for thought. Do I think you sit Armani Rogers in favor of Johnny Stanton? Absolutely not. I'm saying shorten the leash. And if Stanton doesn't get the job done, pull the flipping plug. Out of line, Fox Sports Radio. We'll be right back.
Center point, Spezza. Back across to the right now. Marchessault on the left. He shoots and scores! Marchessault, 4-1, Vegas, power play goal. Here comes Lindbergh. Can he get ahead of the defense? He pulls it away, goes circle. He shoots, he scores! Oscar Lindbergh! 2-0 Golden Knights. Lindbergh just wouldn't give up.
This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot.
Blazing, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 and North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza, a stone's throw from Centennial Hills Hospital. They have 2 happy hours every day in America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. We're up there every Monday night doing the Monday Night Football Party. We've got Kansas City and Denver going at it this Monday night. So come on down. We'll be giving away replica jerseys, wing parties. Again, the 215 in North Durango and the Montecito Crossings Plaza. What else is blazing, man? I mean, I could give a million things. Mags, I decided we're not even going to do the blazing today because blazing is the Las Vegas Golden Knights, the Vegas Golden Knights. I've never seen anything like this. Like I said, it's almost surreal. And Jesse Granger, Las Vegas Sun, joins us at Jesse Granger on Twitter. Jesse, man, I mean, I am at a loss for words. When does this team start playing like an expansion team?
Maybe this is the way an expansion team plays when they were set up the way that they were. You never know. I mean, it's pretty wild. NHL.com had a story the other night after the game saying in the entire 100-year history of the NHL, only 2 teams that have gathered 16 points in their first 9 games, which is what the Golden Knights have, only 2 of them have started that way and missed the playoffs.
Wow. I mean, you know, the playoffs, obviously, it's so far away, I don't even want to get into that after 9 games to start talking about that, because I still feel at some point, I mean, this team are cast-offs. They're unprotected players. They're draft picks. I mean, this is amazing. We've seen expansion before, and I think what benefited the Golden Knights is you just had one new team coming in. So really, they get their pick of the litter, which helped, but this is really surprising. We knew James Neal was going to be able to put the puck in the net. We figured Andres Fleury will get us some wins, but if you would have told me that Oscar Dansk is going to be in net after the 10th game or the 9th game of the season, he's going to really come in, what, in the 7th game of the season, he's going to have a shutout. He's going to have over a 90% saves percentage, and the guy wasn't even supposed to play in the NHL this year, and you're going to tell me we're 8-1. Jesse, I would have said you're spending a lot of time at a dispensary.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of players are playing above their heads, which, like you said, is probably not going to last an entire season, especially a guy like Dansk. But, I mean, you'd hope that by that point, Fleury and Subban are both back. But I think what it really is that this team is so deep. They don't have the top talent superstars. When you look at the top line of the Golden Knights, Perron, Eakin, and Neal, those aren't first line type talents. But also when you look at their third and fourth lines, those are guys that are better than most third and fourth lines around the league. And I think over the course of a game, it starts to wear on other teams in the Golden Knights' favor.
Yeah, you know, it's a good case in point. What is with something that everyone talks about? And I think it's getting a little bit overblown. I think the Turk is getting a little tired of talking about the second period. You know, ever since like the third game of the season, they've really put on display. It's like it's their period. Do you think there's anything to that, or the puck just bounces the right way in the second period at this point in the season?
I mean, the only thing I could say is that they're a really well-coached team, obviously, and in the second period is when you have to do your long line changes because your team's side of the puck is opposite of your bench, whereas in the first and third, your bench is right there. So maybe because this team is really well coached and really well organized, they change better on those long changes. They can execute them better than the other team, but, I mean, that's stretching right there. I'd say it's probably more close to just getting lucky bounces, like you said.
I mean, not 15 goals in the second period. They've scored 9 total in the third and 7 in the first, and, of course, all 3 in the 3 overtimes that they've played. But it's quite a discrepancy. And, you know, again, I just don't think there's anything to it. Like you said, I think that the puck's just bouncing their way, and it's working. And at this point in time, it truly is whatever works. And what do you know, and Frank's coming in after you get off the air because we're spending a lot of time on the Golden Knights today. What have you heard with the goaltenders? I know Subban and Fleury are close to being back. What have you heard?
Well, I mean, there's no timetable for either one. When Subban went down, they said about 4 weeks. That was, I don't know, about a week ago. So he's still a ways out. Fleury, they won't give us a timetable, which is smart because you never know with concussions. It's just whenever he is better. And the one encouraging thing was when Gallant was asked, is it days, weeks, months, or years? He kind of laughed and said, he won't be ready this week, but it's days, which is a good sign, meaning this isn't going to be something that is going to keep him out for a half the season or something like that, which a lot of people feared. So I think Fleury should be back. I don't know. It's tough to guess, but I don't think it's going to be really, really long. But as long as Dansk and Lagasse, who has yet to get in, I'm sure he will soon, as long as they keep playing well, it gives you the luxury and you can kind of ride this Fleury thing out as long as possible.
Again, as we talk about it, it's still a surreal feeling. I think all of us kind of get that sense. It's so cool. Like I said at the beginning of the show, the only thing I can say when I'm asked by people what in the hell is going on in Las Vegas and how is this going on, I've got two words that I can say, and that's it. It's called Vegas Strong. I don't know what else it is. It's a mystique. It's magic because, you know, even listening to ESPN and Barry Melrose and everyone, they're like, just be prepared. Even Ed Graney across the hall, eventually they'll start playing like an expansion team. It's going to happen. Get prepared for this. Don't even get excited for playoffs. I just don't know. I mean, can something like this, and Frank just popped in, so, you know, for both of you, can this continue? I mean, can it really continue? And let's not be homers here. Let's not be unrealistic, but like Jesse said, our top line, these three guys might not be a top line on any other team, but yet we are so deep that is what makes us good. But can this continue?
Well, I mean, they're not going to continue going 8-1 every 9 games. Obviously, no team in the league is going to do that. But I think this team is they're somewhere in between. They're not an elite team like their record shows now, obviously. But I think they're also not that bottom feeder that we portrayed them as. We, including me, portrayed them as before the season. I think they're somewhere in the middle. Will they make the playoffs? I don't know. But I don't think this is going to be a team that's going to be guaranteed to be in the bottom five in the league, even if they do come down to earth. I think this team is the bottom level of what they can reach is a lot higher than what we thought it was going into the season.
Yeah, you know, Jesse, we've talked about it several times amongst ourselves and along with Ryan, the hockey guy, Wallace. The thing about this team is their first and second lines might not be as good as other teams' first and second lines, but they're competitive and they're all professional and they know what they're doing. And the third and fourth lines are arguably better or as good as anybody else in the league because of that depth, because all these guys are NHL experienced. They don't have a bunch of rookies, and there are a lot of teams that are hit by the salary cap year in and year out. They're constantly having to refurbish and retool their teams and change up their lines and everything. And these guys bonded together quicker than most people thought they were going to, and some of them have a chip on their shoulder. In fact, most of them do. They were all left unprotected, so they're playing together, and they've gelled together. They've gelled around the community. The community's gelled around them. And, yeah, I don't know exactly what bottoming out for this team is. Yes, they're certainly not going to go 8-1 every nine games, but we thought they'd be competitive. And if they can get solid goaltending and the coaching of Gerard Gallant, who's also got a chip on his shoulder the way that he was let go, there's no reason that this team can't continue to be competitive and fight for a playoff spot.
It's so much fun to watch this team right now and to watch this town and to see how everyone's embracing them, to see feel the electricity in the air at T-Mobile Arena. I got to ask you guys one name, and Frank, I'll start it with you. What is with Vadim Shipachyov? How do you just do that, just bail?
Well, I mean, this is a guy who was brought over. They paid him $9 million.
I know.
He didn't come over here from the KHL to go to the AHL or anything else. He came to be an NHL player. Expectations by a lot of people and maybe the media and others as well, they thought he was going to be Vladimir Tarasenko or Artemi Panarin or some of those other guys. Some guys it takes longer to gel, to get used to. And maybe he just doesn't fit Gerard Gallant's game plan, the way that he plays, or he didn't get on the right line. When all through training camp, he was training with the first line of players out there. Then all of a sudden, James Neal comes back. He's down to the fourth line, and then bang, he's on the fifth line, which means you're in Chicago. That's not what he came here for. I'm sure he's frustrated, and it hasn't worked out for him for whatever reason. He's a good player, and he always had a smile on his face on the ice, but there's so many other things that go involved. And again, he's playing against every other guy who does have NHL experience.
No, very true. I just don't understand. Again, it's kind of something that you give off to the team when you do that. And it's all of a sudden you're marking yourself. You're giving yourself a scarlet letter. And he still has an agent. He still has people that have to advise him. And it's so unethical. And I understand, yeah, $9 million, but I'd say that's 9 million reasons to show up and play wherever the hell you're told to play.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I heard Gary Lawless on the NHL Network. And the people on the NHL Network, and I don't know if you heard this or not, Jesse, but they were trying to get Gary to admit the reason you guys sent him to Chicago was so that he would get upset and just walk away and you'd be out of the contract, that you didn't have to worry about it. And Gary was basically, no, they believe in this guy. They want him to play there. Now, I hadn't heard that theory before. Maybe there's something to it. He obviously didn't feel comfortable around the media. Whenever we tried to talk to him, I mean, he was like a cat on a hot tin roof. He was looking at his agent. He gave real short answers. And as soon as the interpreter was done, he was out of there. He came here to play hockey, and he doesn't feel he's doing that. I can't speak for him. He seems like a nice guy, but he seems like a guy that maybe the surroundings were a little bit bigger than he thought. And at 30 years old, and he had his wife here in Vegas and that, what's really going on with him? I don't know. But I know he didn't seem comfortable. The only time he ever seemed comfortable was on the ice.
Fair enough. Did you see Jesse, Frank? You see Jason Garrison? Did you see that coming?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I mean, they had to get rid of a defender. They've had nine of them on the active roster since the beginning of the season started. Not many teams do that. Most have eight, and it's been caught. I mean, that's part of the reason Shipachyov was sent to the AHL. Actually, that's the biggest reason, is just because they just had too many defenders. And I think they were trying to figure out which one could they slip through waivers. Garrison was the most likely, not because of his play, but because he makes $4.6 million a year. And at this point in the season, not that many teams have that much room under the cap. And then the ones that do probably don't want to spend it on mid to lower level defender like Garrison.
Yeah, and the very reason that he could slip through the waivers because of that 4.6 is the very reason that it's going to be hard to get rid of Shipachyov because of the 4.5. Unless they want to eat part of that contract to trade him to somebody else.
What do you guys think this road trip is going to prove to all of us. We just had a tremendous homestand, which I think was obviously we all think was beneficial. The atmosphere at T-Mobile Arena was electric. Now they go on the road for an extensive amount of time. What do you think this is going to prove to us here, and what are we going to see?
I'm so done saying that this team's finally going to start losing games. I've been doing it since the season started. Oh, don't worry. They'll start losing once they play Boston. Oh, don't worry. Here comes St. Louis. They'll lose then. But the Blackhawks are here. This is where they're going to come down to earth. No, I'm so tired of like saying, yeah, this is where, because the thing is, yeah, they probably should come back down to earth when they go on this road trip. But so far that has proven wrong every single time. I think they don't play any really, really elite teams to start this road trip off. New York and both New York teams and Boston, they already beat. I think they're going to continue to play well. Like I said, maybe not an 8-1 pace, but I think that they will win games on this road trip.
No, I think they'll win some games too. And remember, on a road trip, basically what you're trying to do is if you go 500, it's a successful road trip. Now, it might not be here in Vegas because of the expectations, the unrealistic expectations that some of the fans now have. But I think they're going to continue to be competitive. If the goaltending continues to be solid, I think they can win some of the games here. And one of the strange things and one of the scary things for the rest of the league, the way this team's already bonded, and we talked to Nate Schmidt about this a little bit, on the road, teams tend to bond even more. If this team gets even closer and gets more cohesive, then we'll see if they're really legitimate. And the one thing I hope they do, I hope they win enough that finally people can start giving them credit around the country and saying, oh, everything's done with smoke and mirrors and, oh, this and that, the reason or whatever. Maybe it's time for people, if they continue to win on this road trip, to admit that, you know what, they might be a pretty decent team.
I'm really hoping to admit that. Guys, I'll pose you another question is, the biggest surprise to this point for you on this team, what you've seen and what's kind of blown you away. Obviously, Oscar Dansk, all of us are sitting back scratching our heads on this kid because he has just been lights out based on the way he came in. You know, you thought the first game, you don't really have time to think and prepare. He knows he's going to be between the pipes, and he has just done nothing but do the job. To have a shutout in your second official start is amazing, but outside of that, what has surprised you the most, Frank?
Well, it's interesting that you bring up Oscar Dansk because I was talking with Clayton Hamilton and also with Ryan, and I thought that he was the second best goalie in training camp. I really did. He impressed the heck out of me. I thought he was better than Calvin Pickard. And Marc-Andre Fleury is Marc-Andre Fleury. But Dansk really impressed me, and he said over and over again, he left Columbus because he was so far down on their depth chart that he thought this was an opportunity. Did I think he was going to be this good right out of the gate? No, and he's also gotten help from the defense. But what's wowed me the most and impressed me the most is how quickly this team has come together and gelled and come together as a unit. And they genuinely seem to like each other. And I know you can have adversity in the locker room and still be successful, but for an expansion team, you don't want that. This team came together quicker than anybody thought, and it shows on their play on the ice.
Jesse, a player that stands out to you as somebody that you saw him in camp a little bit, you've seen him, saw him in preseason, and all of a sudden the regular season, I've got a guy in mind, but you saw him in the regular season, and it's like, wow, I didn't expect this.
For me, it's absolutely Luca Spezza. During preseason, he was, in my opinion, one of the worst defensemen on the ice, and I was even saying he might be one of the guys that gets cut and waived before the season starts. They put an A on his chest as an alternate captain, and I was like, whoa, that's weird. And turns out Luca Spezza just doesn't care much about preseason because he's been the best defenseman on the Golden Knights. Not only that, but every night he's shadowing the best player on the other team, whether it's Jack Eichel, Patrick Kane. Every single night, the best offensive weapon for the opposing team, Luca Spezza, basically stands on their bench and hops over onto the ice every time he touches the ice.
No
and
question.
He's done a great job. So for him to be playing against the opposing best scorer and still have a positive plus minus is unreal. So he's definitely been my biggest surprise.
Well, from this point forward, I'm going to go first before Jesse because I have nothing to say after that. I echo those sentiments exactly. I was shocked when he got the A, and he has surprised the hell out of me how well he's played. Just great vision. The guy really has great vision, and I think that's something that it's an intangible that you either have or you don't. They say the best basketball players play without the ball. He's a guy that is seeing the ice really, really well, and that's apparent by 6 assists to this point in the season, which I don't think any of us saw coming.
Yeah, and if you want to throw in another guy out there going into training camp that I think shocked everyone with the way that he's played and is still playing, is Brad Hunt. A lot of people, nobody really thought Brad Hunt was a serious player to make this team or to be an integral part of this team, and he has been. He forced them to keep him on the team, and that's one of the reasons they have so many defensemen.
Yeah, I'm impressed. Guys, we're getting ready for the road trip. We're going to see this, and how do you think, okay, just predictions in short term. I don't want long term predictions. I won't do it when my friends ask me, but short term predictions, how do you think they're going to fare, Frank, in this road trip?
I hope they go 500 or a little bit better. I think they're going to go like around 3-2-1. I think they will get a couple losses, but I think they're going to continue to be competitive, and I don't think they're going to be getting blown off the ice.
Jesse?
He said 3-2-1, so that'd be 7 points. I think they get 5 points out of it, so 2-3-1.
That's exactly what I wrote down, too. I'm done with Jesse. Frank, just come in from now on. Jesse is stealing all my thunder, man. It's exactly what I have down for the next for the road trip as well. Guys, listen, I really appreciate Frank taking the time, man. Busiest guy at Lotus Broadcasting right now, and everything you're doing is very well-deserved, man. Love hearing you on the radio, what you guys are doing there. And Jesse, same thing, man. At the games, you're leading the charge with most of the questions to the Turk and other good ones, and I love when he gets on you every now and again. That makes a press conference is even more interesting.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah, and I want to say too, Jesse does a great job with the Sun and also with the Rink Rats podcast. I want to throw this in real quick as well. If you want to check out the games, we will be having some viewing parties where we'll be doing the games on the road. Monday we're going to be at Parkway Tavern up here, 215 in Flamingo, then born and raised in Henderson for Tuesday's game.
Oh, good deal. Well, always a great time to go out, and at the home games, after the home games, you can catch Frank right next door to T-Mobile Arena, which is a pretty good time, right?
Yeah, right over there at Beer House.
Oh,
just,
man.
Don't walk up and put your arm around us and drink beers and tell us that you love us and stuff, because we're trying to do a show.
Hey, the show is great, and I'll tell you what, honestly, that kind of adds to it from a listener standpoint. Listen, we got to take a break. I appreciate, again, thanks to Jesse, Las Vegas Sun. Thanks to Frank, who does everything here. Catch Frank every single day right here on Fox Sports Radio, 2 to 3 o'clock, Vegas Golden Knights Insider. Really cool stuff, man, and, of course, during every game broadcast. We'll be right back, Fox Sports Radio, this out of line. Out of line, Fox Sports Radio. 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, home of the Vegas Golden Knights. On the line with us right now, a guy that had a pretty good day yesterday in the Velocity event over at the South Point, PBR's Velocity event. I'm talking to Cody Ford right now, and a guy back from a pretty serious hip injury, back competing, and had himself a hell of a day yesterday. What's going on, Mr. Ford?
Man, just loving to be alive here in, you know, Las Vegas.
Well, tell me about yesterday's event. From what I understand, you had a really good ride. You're looking forward. You've got today, and then tomorrow the Velocity wraps up. How you feeling, man? You had a good ride yesterday.
Yeah, I'm on top of the world right now. I'm as healthy as I've been in 5 or 6 years, and that's a big thing in this sport. You know, once you get to the peak level of bull riding, you know, the professional bull riders, you know how to do it. It's not that you don't know how. It's just staying healthy and mentally and physically, you know, able to compete. And I feel right now that I'm back at the top of my level, and I had a really good ride last night, placed in the round, and, you know, ready for round two tonight.
You know, Cody, I have gotten an opportunity to interview a few PBR riders, Ryan Dirt Eater, a few other guys, all gentlemen, all guys that you seem pretty intelligent and good, and yet you do a sport that, to me, you have to have 17 screws loose and 6 marbles rolling around to do what you do. I'll tell you what, as tough as nails, I was looking at the last man standing here this past year, the last couple of years. I've gotten an opportunity to cover that event, and I say every time, my girlfriend and I are watching the event, and I'm like, you know something? You couldn't pay me $100,000 just to sit on the bull, and only one person walks away with that, and everyone else walks away with broken bones and nothing else but, you know, to say that they competed. I don't know how you do it, my friend. I don't know how you do it.
You know, There's a lot of people that say, you know, you're not smart enough. No, I ride bulls because I can, not because I have to. And there's some guys that ride bulls because they have to. But, you know, I've got to go all over the world doing something I like to do, getting paid to do something I like to do, you know, and have them pay me to do it. And so, yeah, you know, there's been a lot of ups and downs, and I've had 20 some broken bones and 5 surgeries and stuff like that. And I'm 29 years old, but like I said, I get to do something I love every day and don't have to answer to nobody to do it.
No, you know, like I said, I've watched it. I am completely amazed. I mean, you're talking about a ton of muscle that's underneath you. It has got to be the thrill of a century when you learn how to do something like that. And I can't even imagine the jubilation of actually completing one of those rides. But, my friend, I'm going to say a name to you. It changed your life for a little while. Like you said, you're recovering. But when you hear the word asteroid, you're not thinking of something flying from the outer space. It probably wakes you up in the middle of the night with night sweats.
No, you know, the only thing I regret is I didn't get a chance to get on him again and, you know, take it to him. He probably had his last out last weekend in San Jose, California, and I never did have a chance to get back on him. And that's the only thing I regret.
Well, tell me what your expectations are now. Like you say, you're flying high. You definitely got a great shot at the Velocity event right now. What do you think you need to do to take it all the way and win this thing on Monday night?
Man, I just got to take it one bull at a time. You know, of course, I'm looking forward to, you know, winning this event and going on to T-Mobile next weekend and winning that event. But this sport is very humbling. You can go from champ to chump real fast. So I'm just going to take it one bull at a time and, you know, ride that wave I'm on right now, you know, having a really good bull ride. I dominated last night. And so that's what I want to do every round and just, you know, kind of keep moving forward and go that way.
Way cool. Listen, right now, everyone out there, listen, 702-876-1340. Give me a call. I'm going to give away to caller number 5 a pair of tickets to go see the event that Cody was just alluding to. He's trying to get back there Wednesday night, T-Mobile Arena, the World Finals. You got a chance to qualify in 2008 and 2009. It's been a little stretch since you've gotten this far, and you are right there. How big is this event, and what would it mean to you to get back there again?
Man, you know, just all the injuries I've had since 2009 have just sidelined me year in, year out. And I've been close a few times. 2012, I made the finals, and when Astrid hurt me, I didn't get to go. And last year, I was 6th at the Velocity Finals, and they took 5 to the T-Mobile, you know, the World Finals. And so I was a little depressed about that for a while, but I just let it, you know, kind of build that fire and had a decent year and ready to compete now.
You're feeling good. I mean, you're getting ready to go again. How you feeling in that hip injury, man? I read about it. I'm like, holy cow. I know how debilitating that can be, and especially you kind of can't ride the bulls without a healthy hip. So you okay?
Yeah, I'm as close to 100% as I can get right now. You know, I got some just little nagging injuries, but other than that, you know, I feel like I'm really fit right now. I've been in the gym a lot, really, you know, preparing for this weekend, and I'm as good as I'm going to get right now, and there's no better time to take advantage of it.
Well, listen, my friend, we wish you nothing but the best of luck. I sure hope come Wednesday night I'm seeing you over at T-Mobile Arena and not sitting next to me viewing everybody. I want to see you out there riding healthy, strong. And, hey, we're giving away a couple of tickets, as I said. And also, if you come up to the station, we've got $5 off coupons for the Velocity event for tonight, or I should say today, and tomorrow's the final day. And, again, a chance to win the Rodeo tickets. We appreciate you, Cody. Thanks for coming on the show, and please take care of yourself, man.
Man, I appreciate it. You guys have a good day.
You do the same. Again, Cody Ford, and that is a PBR specialist kicking some tail in the Velocity event over at the South Point Arena going on the next 2 days. Mags, we got to move over to football real quick. And, you know, I'll say this much. We're not going to have the time to really go into the World Series a great deal. I got to tell you, it's everything that I expected it to be. Justin Verlander, I'm going to miss him in Detroit, but I couldn't be happier seeing him in Houston doing what he's doing there. This series is a dogfight from start to finish. It was nice to see Cody Bellinger break out last night and pretty much carry his team back into the game, into this victory. 2-2 tie going into Game 5 in Houston. Then they head back to L.A. for Game 6, maybe a Game 7. What do you think, Chris, from this point forward? Can Houston come back and win this series?
No.
You don't think so?
I think the Dodgers won the World Series last night because for Houston to have won this World Series, they were going to have to win at least two games in Houston. Last night was the game they needed to win. It was great they won Friday, but going up against Kershaw tonight, good luck.
See, here's the thing, Chris, what I think. They're going to lose tonight, Kershaw, although Keuchel's pitched really good.
You think the Dodgers are going to lose tonight?
No, I think the Dodgers are going to win tonight.
Okay.
I think that the Astros are going to lose, but here's the thing. Then they get back Verlander for game six, and I think they can win in L.A.
But the Dodgers were able to get to Verlander in game two. The Dodgers should have won game two.
How would you say they got to him? Two guys hit home runs off him, and that was it.
Because they were losing the game when Canley Jansen came in. Dave Roberts asked Canley Jansen to get six outs.
It's a lot.
It's a lot for Canley Jansen, which I hate the fact that closers can't go two innings. To me, that's a joke.
It's ridiculous.
But the Dodgers should have won game two. Canley Jansen blew the save. One of the best in the business. Houston's lucky they're not down 3-1. And I don't think they win three of the next four.
Well, Chris, I'll tell you, one of the wild things about
two of the next four.
It's two of the next three, right? There's only three games left.
Well, yeah, that's right. Tonight, two of the next three. Yeah, what am I thinking?
Two of the next three, but I want to tell you this, which is crazy. It's the first series. I don't remember anything like this, Chris, which is pretty wild, but this is one series you do not want to leave and disappear for the last couple innings. Check this statistic out. I was doing a little due diligence last night, you know, me and my sickness the night before the show. In the first eight innings, the batting averages combined of the two teams is 177. They have a .309 slugging percentage. They've scored 19 runs and 7 home runs, and that is it. This is in the first four games of the series, innings 1-8. Listen to innings 9 or later, the statistics. It's mind-boggling. .333 batting average, .976 slugging percentage, 14 dingers and 14 runs and 8 home runs. 7 home runs total, Chris, in the first four games, innings 1-8, and then 8 runs in 9 innings or later. It's incredible how later in these games, these teams just get better, and they dig in and they fight. One of the most exciting series I've seen, game 5 today in Houston. All right, man, let's get this going. Chris, who do you like? It is game time. Pick out a game and give me who you like.
I'm going to go with Dewey's Patriots. The line opened at 5.5. It's up to 7. If you bet it early, you got a good number on it. I think New England finally got it going last week. They shut down Atlanta. Chargers traveling to the East Coast. Melvin Gordon did not practice all week for the Chargers. He is going to play. I just think New England gets the job done at home against a bad Chargers team.
And Dewey is going with, of course, the betting writer for the Las Vegas Review Journal. He is taking the Steelers at Detroit and giving laying 3 points.
I like
points.
That one as well.
I know you do. I'm going to stay away only because it's my own team, and I'm going to go with the Seattle Seahawks laying 6.5 to the Texans. I think too much of a distraction. Listen, want to thank everyone. We are out. I want to thank Frank Harnish, Jesse Granger. I want to thank Magnum, and we'll see you next week, same time, same place. Out of line, Fox Sports Radio, over and out.